the masses listening to us on electronic broadcast of various sorts that file item number 5, SB 1376, by Senator Morrell, will not be heard today. It's been pulled. San Gregorio Pass, a water agency. And also, which was to be for vote only, file item number 6, a reconsideration, SB 890, by the gracious Senator Gaines, dealing with sales and use tax on firearms and ammunition, is not going to be pulled. We are going to start with file item number 1, SB 1103. Senator Cannella, you may proceed.
All right, thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members. SB 1103 provides a much-needed increase to California's renter's tax credit. California faces a statewide crisis driven by an increasing divide between incomes and rents. According to the California Housing Partnership, median incomes have fallen 8% since 2000, while rental prices have increased by 21%. One of the many mechanisms the state has used to address the issue is through a renter's tax credit to reduce the income tax liability of California's renters. However, while the renter's tax credit's income eligibility requirements are adjusted for inflation annually, the actual tax credit's amounts are not. Since 1998, the income eligibility requirements have increased by 53% in response to inflation, while the actual credit amounts have seen no increase. This diminishes the benefit of the tax credit to California renters at the same time that rental prices have soared. This bill increases the current tax credit of $60 for individuals to $100, and the current $120 credit for married couples and head of households to $200. Thank you, and I ask for an aye vote. It's early.
Any opposition? Man, I don't know if this is good or bad, Senator.
It's just early, Mr. Chairman, so.
It's $150 million. I guess no one's paying attention and whatever. Senator Morlock, questions?
I did a little research on it, and so you're right. The credit starts at $50,000 back in 98 for taxable income, and then it moves up to $76,000 518 to 2015. So it's gone up, like you said, about 53%. So if that's being adjusted for inflation, why should we touch the 60 and the 120?
Are you saying why should we?
Yeah.
Well, I guess I'm using that exact argument. I'm saying the eligibility requirements are being adjusted, and so, but the amount is not, right? So I think the dollar is not going as far as it used to go, and so $60 back when it started is not what it was today, obviously, because of inflation. So it's getting eaten into. So I think this is a nominal increase to have it keep up with inflation. It's $150 million. I haven't seen the actual numbers because we'll deal with that in appropriations if we get there. But I think it's a nominal increase. It's a nominal cost to the state, and it makes a big difference to renters for sure.
Well, it's been nominal, and I just wonder why we even bother. I mean, I appreciate your bumping it up, but it seems a little trivial, and I just wonder why. Maybe, Mr. Chair, you know the history of this credit. It was gone from 93 to 97, which was another recessionary period, and then we brought it back. But it seems so de minimis, and I'm just wondering why it's there, and why can't we even raise it more? Why?
Well, Senator Morlock, it's a situation where in certain parts of the state where there's a predominance of renters, it's just been a big issue. It just has historically. You know, I don't know in terms of the neck of the woods that you represented, but certainly I've seen it over the years. It's just been a big political issue, and it's important in terms of the dynamic between ownership and renters and the sense that owners get, you know, tax deductions, and lots of times renters are paying more money otherwise. And now you've seen rents go up dramatically. You just saw in the increase of minimum wage that, you know, what's really going on. Rents are increasing and utilities are increasing, right?
Right.
Where the money's going. And that's it's been the big issue.
$5 a month in a credit. And just so I'm just arguing about why, if it's so trivial, why are we bothering? So I'll make a motion. I'll move the bill. But I just think that the senator touches on something where maybe we need to take a bigger look at what we're doing here instead of throwing a, you know, what do you call it? Throw them a carrot or a bone?
Maybe on an individual basis, but our analysis was at least $130 million minimum. We did our own back of the envelope, $150 million. So it obviously affects, it may be a small number, but it certainly affects a lot of human beings. you know. I want to just real briefly before we proceed on this, I want to introduce Mariah, who is an advocate for foster youth from the California Youth Connection. She's from Santa Clara. She's 16. She's here with Senator Bell shadowing him today because, of all senators, he is by orders of magnitude the man who now casts the smallest shadow in relationship to the shadow that he used to cast. So I guess there's some poetry in that measure. So I just wanted to, she's here observing and participating in the process. I just wanted to acknowledge her presence here today, okay? Okay, well, good. We can't have a motion yet. We don't have a quorum. We've got to wait for one other senator. But Senator Bell has a question.
Tax credit. This is the tax credit really is applied to people that pay taxes, correct? So those under the income level where they don't pay taxes, right. This would not apply to those people making, I don't know, roughly what, Mr. Chairman, $40,000.
$47,000, I think.
Yeah, so those people would not benefit from this. This would be sort of the 47 to $76,000 range.
Or above, yeah, exactly.
So that's the tax credit for renters that make in that range. The question would be, did you look at applying a refundable tax credit to those that are not paying taxes in terms of this issue? Is that something you thought of, or is that something you would be willing to consider? How do you feel about that?
Yeah, the number is actually $38,259 for a single, and then $76,518 for married or joint filers. And so, look, I haven't seen the actual impact to the general fund, but it probably is somewhere in the range of $130, $150 million.
Yeah.
With this criteria, if the criteria is, again, I voted for earned income tax credits before. I think we've done one at the state, and I will look. My goal is for people to have more money and maybe government to have a little bit less. That's what I'd like to see. But we also, it's hard to occasionally get things through when you have a larger impact to the general fund. So I would be interested in that. I think people that are, you know, $38,000 isn't very much money for folks that live in California. So I'd like for them to have a lot more of their money back. But in this case, we're trying to take a small bite at the apple. And then if it's something that you'd like to work on, I'd be happy to work with you on that, Senator.
Yeah, the idea might be to look at options like lowering the top end and pushing the bottom end down a little lower. You know, that's something, you know, you can kind of do it like one way or the other. So in purposes of this bill, it's for those who pay taxes, those that pay taxes, and it's the first group of people that pay taxes to get a renter's tax credit. And that's essentially the nature of the bill. It's not to give the refundable tax credit to those that don't pay taxes below that threshold in terms of state income tax laws. Yeah, I don't have any more questions, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. I support the bill. I think it obviously is going to have to be dealt with in terms of all the things we do to pay for it in the general fund. So that's obviously an issue.
Okay. Yeah, and I just think in closing, Mr. Chairman, it may seem nominal, but one of my current staffers that works for me in the Senate qualified for this tax credit, and it was a difference between this person paying taxes and not having to pay taxes. So it is nominal, but to a person that's poor, every bit helps.
Everything matters. Exactly right. All right, let us establish a quorum. Secretary, call the roll.
Hertzberg.
Here.
Hertzberg present. Wynn. Bell.
Here.
Bell present. Hernandez. Lara. Morlock. Present. Morlock present. Pavley. Here. Pavley present.
Okay, we have a quorum. Thank you for your close, sir. Was that a motion by Senator Bell? So, no. You did? Well, what do I do? Who do I pick? You made the motion. I was thinking about that, but, you know, bitcoins don't, you can't have physical. That's all I have.
Let the authors choose.
So Senator Morlock moves. This is a due pass to appropriations. Secretary, call the roll.
Hertzberg.
Aye.
Hertzberg, aye. Wynn. Bell.
Aye.
Bell, aye. Hernandez. Lara. Morlock. Morlock, aye. Pavley.
Aye.
Pavley, aye.
4-0, we'll hold that open. Thank you kindly, Senator. Senator Stone is in the audience. He has two measures here today. File item number 2, SB 1104, property tax for senior and disabled veterans. Sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, honorable members. I'm delighted to be here today to present SB 1104. First off, I would like to accept the technical amendments on page 4 of the committee analysis as author amendments. An issue that is currently plaguing California is the issue of veterans who are homeless. Veterans have sacrificed much for their country, and in return, local, state, and federal government needs to do everything they can in order to help them succeed. There's no single solution that can solve this crisis. Reasons for the large number of homeless veterans are complex and numerous. Two of the biggest factors are the extreme shortage of affordable housing and livable income. SB 1104 attempts to address the affordable housing issues for veterans by doing the following. Caps the property taxes on any primary residence of an honorably discharged veteran over the age of 65. And two, exempts the property taxes of all 100% disabled veterans living in their primary residence. Every dollar will help. By making these two changes, it will go a long way to helping veterans stay in their homes by making their living situation more affordable. With that, I would respectfully ask your aye vote.
Thank you. Witnesses in support? Witnesses opposed? Question? Oh, here we go.
Samantha Corbin on behalf of the California Tax Reform Association, unfortunately in opposition to the measure. As your committee analysis rightly points out, we would encourage the author to look at limiting the benefits of this bill based on income of the disabled veteran. Thank you.
Okay. Question, Senator Morlock. Could we just have you, like, a standing question, so just think of something every time, and if you haven't, I'll just always go to you first.
Yeah, I want to thank you for showing up on time and getting this meeting going in a prompt manner.
Fair call. I apologize. I was on an airplane.
Senator Stone, you're a former supervisor, so this will impact revenues for counties.
Yes.
You have support from CSAC, or have you collaborated with them at all on this matter?
No, we haven't. This is, in its present form, is a cost of about $75 million. And I can tell you, coming from a very pro-military county, Riverside County, we had a program called the Valor Program, which I brought to the board. Veterans Assistance Leadership, Riverside County, our goal was to get every homeless veteran off the streets in the county, and we did it in 4 months. And so I think my colleagues would welcome this kind of a program to help our vets. And I'm very proud that the Veterans of Foreign Wars and the American Legion have supported this effort.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
For indulging me. I appreciate that.
Never an indulgence. It is the constitutional responsibility of this branch of government to engage. And I always deeply appreciate your thoughtful engagement. Doing your constitutional duty. Thoughts, Senator Pavley?
I was just curious. And so if that's anyone who was a veteran over 65, and they can—
That includes Warren Buffett, I would guess.
That's what I'm just—
yeah. That's the question.
That is the only—
Yeah, that's the question we had too.
That's the only question.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's a very valid concern, and I would be happy to amend the bill to put income restrictions on those that honorably serve, that the goal is for lower income veterans to be able to stay in their homes. And I think it's a very valid concern, which will lower the cost significantly. But also just what really prompted me to write this bill was we have a number of nonprofit organizations in our county that have been very successful in providing homes for double and triple amputees, because we live close to Camp Pendleton. And it's wonderful to go into these homes, and they have, you know, wide hallways, hoists to put them into showers, hoists to put them into beds. And the rate limiting step now for these veterans to stay in their homes, they don't have a mortgage anymore, but those property taxes still live. And so I want to be able to keep these veterans in these special homes that have been donated to them, and I think this bill will go a long way to helping solve that problem.
Okay. With regard to that amendment, does it, with respect to the will of the committee, 50,000 single, 100,000?
It goes to appropriation.
Yeah.
Because they will be doing that too. I don't know what the number is.
Well, with that type of amendment, Mr. Chair, I'll move the bill since Warren Buffett owns two homes in my district in Emerald Bay, and I think that's a great point.
It wouldn't apply because it's only your primary residence.
Primary residence,
so you'd have to be in Nebraska.
And if you move, it's still, you can still qualify.
As long as it's your primary residence.
Yes,
yeah,
if you
yeah,
move from
yeah. If your second home or third home, doesn't apply.
The okay. Vietnam
anything further, sir?
group is huge.
I ask for I vote. I'm happy to take the amendments.
Okay, you've taken the technical amendments, and for purposes of, do you want to do this in this committee, or do you want to just do it in the probes for purposes of qualified taxpayer? The notion here is that for a qualified taxpayer, the limitation is 50,000 for single, 100,000 for joint filers?
I accept that.
Does that make good? It works sense? Okay, we can write that. Okay. Do you pass the amendment? Been moved. Secretary, call the roll.
Hertzberg?
Aye.
Hertzberg, aye. Wynn? Bell?
Aye.
Bell, aye. Hernandez?
Aye.
Hernandez, aye. Lara? Morlock?
Aye.
Morlock, aye. Pavley?
Aye.
Pavley, aye. You have five.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members.
5-0. Thank you kindly, sir. We'll hold that open for, I know Senator Wynn's not here, just for Senator Lara. All right. File item number 4, SB 1148. Senator Stone?
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman.
Just real quickly, if you can call Senator Galgiani, I'd appreciate that. She's the last one up. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'd like to thank the committee staff once again for their hard work, and I would like to accept the committee amendments and accept them as author amendments. I'm pleased to present SB 1148, which will help working families across California deal with college affordability. Education costs in California and across the nation have skyrocketed in recent years. According to PPIC, in-state tuition of both UC and CSU has more than tripled over the past 20 years. From 2004 to 2013, the average in-state tuition paid by students jumped from around $4,000 to $9,000. The average annual in-state college tuition in California was $13,492 for fiscal year 2014-15 academic year. These increases are a source of concern for Californians who fear they may be priced out of post-secondary education or forced to incur more and more debt in order to complete their degrees, understanding that the national debt of students in the United States is approaching $3 trillion. As more students worry about rising costs and the impact of their loans will have once they leave school, pressure on both students and their families to secure financing for education is escalating. Even more worrying is that these increased costs disproportionately affect middle and low-income families. SB 1148, as amended, will allow individuals making below $80,000 or joint filers making below $160,000 to claim a deduction of up to $4,000 or $2,000, respectively, for payments made towards tuition and qualified education expenses, as defined by federal law. SB 1148 will bring the tax code into conformity with federal law with regard to these very important deductions. SB 1148 will also contain a 5-year sunset so that we can review and make sure this program is truly helping our students and parents. This bill may not solve all of our problems with making college affordable for more families, but it's certainly a step in the right direction. I thank you very much for your consideration and respectfully ask for your aye vote.
Thank you kindly, Senator. Those in support, opposition? Morlock. Here we go. Yeah, the tax reform people are coming back again. No. Except I am inclusive in all groups I work with. They all have value in the system. But I don't know them well.
Mr. Chair, members, Samantha Corbin, California Tax Reform Association, unfortunately in opposition to this measure as well. Studies have shown that the federal tax credit on tuition only rewards those who would otherwise be paying for college and going in the first place. There's actually a very negligible impact on incentivizing students going to college. They were unsuccessfully proposed for elimination by the Obama administration because of this. So it's not sensible tax policy for the state to conform to these credits in light of their failure to have a beneficial impact on anyone going to college in the first place. We would argue that the revenue loss from this bill would be much better used in programs that improve access, programs like Cal Grant B, which pays some of the costs of living for students who've already received tuition waivers but are otherwise going into debt regardless. For those reasons, we oppose the measure.
Can I ask you a question? Because you know, if you're really rich, the cost of tuition doesn't really matter. If you're really poor, there's a tremendous amount of programs that can help you. The challenge that we had when I served on the boards of higher education for California
was always these folks in the middle that maybe can do it, but man, it's tough. Man, it's tough. And one of the challenges you're facing in government, at least from my point of view, is that those folks are feeling that nobody ever cares about them. Speaker Perez was doing this program for middle-class scholarships. There's been some efforts afoot, but we have been so attentive, and in a lot of ways, in brilliant ways. The increases in tuition to be able to then pay for people of less fortunate means and the like. But what you're saying here is you're given, so when someone fills out their form and they're paying those huge bills and they're borrowing and they're squeaking by and they get a couple of bucks from government, maybe isn't it just sending them a message that this is something that we're trying to help them out a little bit? I just wanted to hear what your thoughts are on that.
Sure. I think my response to that would be we would argue that a direct expenditure program would be more appropriate. So there's certainly other ways to provide students in that kind of middle income bracket with other ways to, you know, whether it's a program or a reduction in actual costs of attending college in the first place at state colleges. Certainly there's other ways that we could prioritize in the budget to make college more affordable.
The problem with all these programs is that you got to have a government head to think about them. You got to fill out the forms. You got to apply. You got to talk to somebody. Checking a box when you're filling out your tax return is a pretty simple thing in terms of just the experience of this of the person who's the parent or whoever it is going to paying for the tuition. And we always, these programs are such that it's, I'll get you in a second, are so hard to manage on a personal level. I mean, you pull your hair out trying to fill out all these forms and what to do and do what I qualify. And then you get experts to get hired that pay as a consultant to say what you can apply for and what you can't apply for. And we create this whole political industrial complex of crap, that's a defined term in the law, of stuff that you see in order to be practical in solving problems. This is a way where you get a benefit and you can feel it and see it at a time when you're feeling oppressed by your government and paying your taxes. It probably is a pretty good time to be able to give somebody a little bit of relief. I just want to hear your thoughts, and Senator Bell has something on that as a question. And Senator Pavley, and Senator Morlock.
Anyone else?
Senator Hernandez. Go ahead, just real quickly, what your thoughts are on that, because it is a practical thing. I'm so frustrated about governments. What is it like to be somebody in California and interface with your government? And what we want to do is to make that the most positive, easy experience you can possibly have. And another form does not make life easier.
I would agree that another form does not make life easier. I would argue that reducing the cost of state colleges would certainly make a lot of people's lives easier. Tuition at UC, state colleges continues to rise. Students struggle to continue to be able to afford that at a variety of income ranges. Again, prioritizing through the budget process to ensure that those costs went down significantly would benefit all students and wouldn't require any paperwork from them.
So I'm going to, Senator Bell, Senator Pavley, is it okay to put you up last, sir, even though you had word first? Is that okay?
That's fine.
Okay, thank you, sir. Senator Bell, Senator Pavley, and Senator.
Sure.
Why?
When I look at this, I generally reacted favorably to it, given the fact that we're setting some thresholds. I think that's a good idea. But the other part of it was a lot of families are trying to invest, Mr. Chairman, in college saving plans. And even if they can put just a little bit of money into the college savings plans, that would help in the end result in terms of not having a situation where somebody that's 18 and accepted to a college and then faced with the need to finance their education, and then they're forced to go out and borrow money. So I think our strategy should be the combination of all these things to eliminate debt due to college, okay? Debt due to college is a bad thing. And so any kind of strategy, kind of a combination, and each family is going to have a different strategy for their family to have their children go to college. You know, everybody's different. So we need to have this lowering the total amount of student debt in California as a strategy, and it could be, this is part of it. There's the incentives for the, what is it, the 529 tax exempt savings. Yeah, incentives for that, making sure we have robust Cal grants. And then the other one would be to keep tuition down as much as we can by our direct money that we put into college. You know, so we don't want tuition to keep rising because it's becoming an exclusionary thing as opposed to what we need is, what is it, Senator Hernandez and others are trying to encourage healthcare workers and the workforce development programs that we need for all kinds of other tech professions in science and math and so forth to keep our economy going. So I think we're looking at a shortage of a million college graduates in California. Right. So we need this, maybe we can all come together on some kind of fiscal strategy to eliminate this debt that burdens that group of families that don't have the opportunity to go to college because of the cost. And that was the kind of family I had with my 9 brothers and sisters, you know. So I'm very sensitive to this particular issue. So thank you, Senator.
Thank you. And just before this. I go on to Senator Pavlik, in that regard, because I really think your point's well taken about the larger discussion. I just was in meetings yesterday on the whole issue of commercialization of IP, intellectual property, coming out of the universities. Columbia raises $150 million a year. UCLA just had a $1.2 billion sale where their interests was, and Gene Block, the chancellor there, took the $1.2 billion in order to give it to scholarships for less fortunate folks. So here's another income stream of being creative and innovative and California-esque, if you will, of coming up with ways holistically to look at this issue. I just am impressed because when you're sitting there paying your taxes, you know, and you had all these bills and you got no money because you spent all your money in tuition, the fact that government is there and you got a box you can check off and get a little relief from it, to me, is a positive thing you can easily do for folks who are paying tuition for their kids. Senator Pavlik.
Yes, thank you. This is... thank you for carrying this bill, Senator Stone. But this is something that's really important in regards to recruiting teachers into the classroom.
Interesting.
I'm carrying a bill, Senate Bill 62. For those of you who don't know, it's very frustrating for the middle class, growing sort of anger. Half the students at CSUs get a full ride. Can go up to 6 years. But let's say you're trying to attract people into the teaching profession. Many of them come from the middle class. What you may not realize, the amount of people going into teaching has dropped by 75% in the teacher credentialing programs at the CSU system. And one of the major overriding reasons is the student loan debt. The average teacher coming through, and you have to go to college 5 years, the average teacher has student loan debt of over $22,000, some as high as $40,000, it depends. They will counsel you out of being a teacher.
Really?
Because, let's say you have a student loan debt of $30,000, you're going to be paying $700 to $800 a month every month for 20 years.
Huh.
So I'm attempting to reinstitute, and it's another tool in the toolbox, a program that we used to have in the state of California called Apple. It's a loan assumption program in exchange for teaching 5 years in a disadvantaged school or in a hard-to-fill subject area. You may not realize special education teachers, over half of them now have to have their credentials waived. They've never gone through student teaching. They're not fully credentialed. And we're getting more and more, whether it's science and math or special ed, across all different school districts. Teachers' beginning salary is about $42,000 a year. You can't afford to have
that.
You cannot afford that. And it has ripple effect all over the place.
Even if you have a mustard sandwich.
They're paying off their student loans, so they're living at home, fine. So the loan assumption programs, forgiveness programs, we used to spend in the state up through 2012, $80 million a year on these loan assumption programs. All of that was gotten rid of, and we're trying to reinstitute it. but in the teaching profession specifically. This is one of the reasons why middle-class kids are not thinking about teachers. Hmm. Being teachers, they can't afford to.
Interesting. Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Last year, we had a massive federal to California tax conformity bill by Assemblyman Ting. We even joked about reading one of, could you explain one of the lines in this massive bill? So I'm sort of surprised that this wasn't caught in that net. But if this bill hasn't been moved, I'll be happy to move it.
Very good. Bill's been moved. And anything further, Senator?
Thank you very much, members, for all your thoughtful comments. I appreciate some of the ideas that have been mentioned, and certainly recruiting teachers is very important. This bill obviously doesn't affect the wealthy. They can afford to go to school, and the working poor have scholarships that get them to school. It's a middle class that needs some help, and this is a nice message sent by the state of California that we do value them, and we want them to go to school, and we want to help. I urge
Thank you
vote.
So much, Senator. I appreciate it very much. Secretary, call the roll.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry, the motion. This is due pass as amended to appropriations, correct, sir? Due pass as amended to appropriations by Senator Morlock. Okay, Secretary, call the roll.
Hertzberg?
Aye.
Hertzberg, aye. Wynn? Bell?
Aye.
Bell, aye. Hernandez?
Aye.
Hernandez, aye. Lara? Morlock?
Aye.
Morlock, aye. Pavley?
Aye.
Pavley, aye. 5-0.
5-0, we'll hold it open for
Thank
Senator
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you so very much. Senator Gilgiani. Yeah, I had those.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. SB 1147 would bring clarity and consistency to the regulation of above-ground storage tanks by providing a mechanism for cities and counties to regulate these tanks on the local level. Recently, there have been concerns in Kern County where ASTs have been red-tagged for being out of compliance with county standards. Statewide, ASTs are required to meet UL 142, which is the standard for safety for steel above-ground tanks for flammable and combustible liquids. However, Kern County has required tanks located at farms and other rural sites to meet more stringent standards and has done so without adopting a local ordinance. SB 1147 would maintain local regulation and resolve this issue by requiring cities and counties to adopt an ordinance prior to enforcing AST standards that are more stringent than state or federal AST standards. This is about making sure that locals know what the regulations are before just putting them into a place and then punishing people after the fact. This bill, however, currently solves one of two problems, the other being the use of underground storage tanks as above-ground storage tanks. We are working closely with the state fire marshal to resolve this issue. With me today to testify is Louis Brown, representing the California Cotton Growers and Ginners Association and the Western Agricultural Processors Association. Thank you, and I respectfully ask for your aye vote.
Mr. Chairman, Louis Brown on behalf of the California Cotton Ginners and Growers Association, Western Agricultural Processors Association, and the California Fresh Fruit Association in support of the bill today. What we're finding is this is a very complex issue with multiple agencies overseeing the regulation of these tanks at the local and state level. As your analysis points out and our discussions with staff show, there is an ordinance in Kern County, and it was adopted a few years ago. It was adopted by the fire marshal's office. Well, in counties, you have local regulation by fire marshals as well as other code enforcement agencies, CUPAs. And what we found is that in some of those areas, the CUPAs do not have the same requirement as the fire marshals to adopt the regulations or adopt an ordinance when they're looking to make a more strict standard. So this bill at this time would bring the CUPAs into the same requirement that the fire marshals have. But as Senator Galgiani explained in her opening, there are other issues dealing with the compliance that we in farm country are now dealing with some of these tanks that are not necessarily up to state standards. There's more work to be done here. We're working with the local enforcement agencies as well as the fire marshals to see if that issue can be addressed. But we do know that the element in SB 1147 now is important because it will require that other enforcement agency, when looking to adopt an ordinance more strict than the state standard, to actually bring that to a public hearing before the County Board of Supervisors, allowing those in the area to be notified and be part of that process. We ask for an aye vote.
Thank you so much.
Is it on? Jay McKeeman, California Independent Oil Marketers Association. So our members supply not only fuel to the tanks, but they supply tanks as well. This is a very important issue. We need consistency throughout the state in terms of what the standards are for the tanks. Replacement can be 10 times as much as what the original tank costs, so there's a huge economic consideration that needs to be made, and we're working fully with the author and others to try to resolve a consistent basis of enforcement in the state.
Mr. Chair, Justin Malone for the local enforcement agencies, we the Coopers. Thanks for the analysis. I think you captured it. Just wanted to say we support this approach. We did work with Senator Hannabeth Jackson last year, and we adopted a bill, or you adopted a bill, SB 612, which does essentially the same thing in the business plan. What is actually happening here is that we've got the local environmental health working with the fire folks, but the two code adoption mechanisms don't align. So we believe this is necessary. We want to work with the author and the stakeholders here. We want to figure out if we can improve the consistency throughout the state. And part of this plan would be to see how we bring these other tanks into compliance. So thank you for working with us.
Thank you, sir. Others in support?
Mr. Chairman, John Moffitt on behalf of the Milk Producers Council in support.
Thank you. Any opposition? Questions from Morlock? You can. I mean, it's their job. Motoka.
Read the bill. It was like, oh, I've been here before. So it's the Jackson bill. And what was the status of the Jackson bill?
Well, it's working well. We have started to work through the rulemaking process, but it's only in a few cases where there is a local environmental health department that's adopted provision more stringent than federal or state standards. Current law allows that. This just provides some sort of due process and clarity in that process. So we're not taking away the local jurisdiction's authority to adopt something more protective of public health. We just create a bit more consistency in the process this way.
Thanks for flying all this way for the testimony. I appreciate
it. Long way from Victoria. Anything further? Senator Pavley?
No, I was just curious about the
Jackson.
That one, and why cities and counties need or want more stringent health protection standards other than the flammability. Are there other issues? I don't know, because that's just on the state level. We're always cautious in our state for the federal government saying that we can't pass more stringent standards. I would just suggest to you that when this bill moves forward, if it changes to some extent, to just sort of monitor it. It seems a little duplicative, and I'm not sure why. I don't have a problem passing it today, but curious about.
Right, I think it's a fair observation. Would you like to close, Senator? What? Opposition, I call for opposition? There was no opposition, I'm sorry. No opposition, it's none received. I thought I said it. No. Anything further, Senator Galjani?
I respectfully ask for your aye vote. This will be a good solution to a local issue that's arisen since the initial passage of the original bill.
Thank you. And this is due pass to the floor. Do we have a motion?
A vote, Mr. Chairman.
So moved by Senator Bell. Due pass to the floor. Secretary, call the roll.
Hertzberg?
Aye.
Hertzberg, aye. Wynn? Bell?
Aye.
Bell, aye. Hernandez?
Aye.
Hernandez, aye. Lara? Morlock?
Aye.
Morlock, aye. Pavley?
Aye.
Have we? Aye. 5-0.
5-0. We'll hold that open for Senator Lara. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Senator Galjani. Can we call Senator Lara? I think we're done, except for we need him. Does any of the members need to add on?
Yeah.
Senator, okay, let's go through the file real quick. File item number one, SB 1103. This is Senator Cannella, due pass to appropriations. Motion by Senator Morlock. The vote currently stands 4-0. Secretary, open the roll.
Hernandez? Aye. Hernandez, aye. 5-0.
5-0. Okay. File item number two. Is there anybody?
No.
Nothing on two?
No, we're all good.
We're okay? Everybody else?
Yeah.
Okay.
Good.
So we're just waiting for Senator Lara with respect to these votes. Okay. Thanks, everybody. I'm sorry I was late, Senator Moorlach. You're 100% correct to call me on that. I was trying to get briefed on stuff because I was just came in from the airport. I was in South. No, you're right. You're right. You're right. No, you can pick on me all day long. I just recognize accuracy when accuracy is accurate. I got you.
Okay, good. The article.
Yeah.
It came out this week.
700 lawsuits.
Crazy. I'll read it. Yes. Yeah, hey. So we're waiting for Senator Lara. What we didn't say with respect to Mariah's work here today was under the direction of Senator Bell, her job was to rate all of the witnesses, and we just have a verdict here that Senator Stone was the winner. So if Senator Stone's office is listening, you just won the Mariah Award here for the best presentation. Okay? Thank you, sir. File item number one. SB 1103, Senator Cannella, do pass to Assembly Appropriations. Let's see how close you're listening. To Appropriations, this is a 5-0 vote. Senator Wynn is not here today. Secretary, open the roll.
Lara? Aye. Lara, aye.
Lara, aye. 6-0. The measure is out. Next, file item number two, Senator Stone. This is do pass to Appropriation as amended. 5-0. Secretary, open the roll.
Lara?
Lara,
I, 6-0. 6-0, measure is out. Next, file item number three, Senator Galgiani, do pass to the floor. Vote is currently 5-0. Secretary, open the roll.
Lara?
Aye.
Lara, I.
6-0, measure is out. Next, file item number four, Senator Stone, do pass is amended to appropriations. Motion by Senator Moorlach, 5-0. Secretary, open the roll.
Lara?
Not voting. Okay. 5-0, the measure is out. Okay, next, that's it. Five and six are up. Thank you very much. Meeting adjourned. Thank you, Senator Lara.